One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hello, Real Ghost Stories Online family. This is Tony Bruschi coming to you on the 9th of July, 2021, releasing this virtually within moments of recording it. We received some very sad news here at the show today. Someone who has contributed to our program multiple times with calls and stories. He was a guest on the Grave Talks and really gave us a very serialized story of his accounts of being a security guard at a hotel being renovated in Ohio a couple years back. Glenn, the security guard. From what we're receiving here, what we're absorbing in the news is from AAA Cincinnati, and I'm going to read exactly what they wrote. "We are deeply saddened by the death of one of our drivers. 32-year-old Glenn Ewing was placing a AAA member's vehicle on the back of a tow truck on Sunday night when he was hit by a motorist vehicle. He died last night at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. Our hearts go out to Glenn's loved ones and AAA colleagues during this very difficult time. We will forever be grateful to Glenn and all first responders who have given their lives while helping others," said John Pelosky, Vice President of Fleet Operations of AAA Club Alliance. Ewing joined AAA Alliance Cincinnati Fleet in 2019 and was quickly known as a hero. In July of last year, he witnessed a shooting while assisting a AAA member and quickly rendered first aid to the victim by applying his belt as a tourniquet until medical personnel arrived. Ewing's death illustrates why slow down, move over laws are critical to safety. The best thing drivers can do to keep someone on the side of the road safe is to slow down and move over into the next lane if you can do so safely. Whether someone is fixing a tire or working on a tow, move away and change lanes to create a safe space around them. Their lives are on your shoulders, Polsky said. The Cincinnati Police is continuing the investigation into this incident. Anyone with information on this case is asked to contact the Cincinnati Police Traffic Unit at 513-352-2514. Obviously, this news comes to us as a huge shock. I believe Glenn even had called in to the show in the last couple of weeks. I remember hearing a call from him giving us an update on what was going on in his life. In the coming week, Carol and myself will be doing an episode in memoriam to Glenn. We're going to play back his calls from the time when he was a security guard and the very compelling story that he painted for all of us. At that point in time, we'll be airing that in the coming week. Something like this just comes as a shock to the system. You want to do something. You want to reach out and you want to help out. I've been looking around. As far as I know at this point, I haven't seen anything of a GoFundMe or anything for the family, but I'm looking for that. I'm trying to find any information I can. And as we have that, we will pass that along to you this week. And I know we all are sitting here going, what can we do? And I think we'll get more of that information in the coming days. And I will pass it along to you on the show and on our social media channels. And if you see anything, feel free to reach out and let me know, too, so we can pass that information along to everyone as well. I think for now, what we can do is remember Glenn. Remember his storytelling, his spirit, his willingness to really give us his raw perspective on the things that he experienced. We're going to play back for you now an interview that I did with Glenn a couple years ago when he was a security guard at that infamous haunted building. This I'm going to play in its entirety. It's from the Grave Talks. I'm going to give you part one and part two all together so you can hear his complete story as we remember Glenn Ewing. Rest in peace, my friend. Today on The Grave Talks, securing the dead. Being surrounded by the dead is one thing. Being charged with keeping a building safe and secure while being harassed and tormented by them is another. Glenn is a security guard at a once historic hotel building. Nearly every day on the job, he encounters the dead still roaming the halls of this once glamorous building, which had fallen onto hard times. A building allegedly filled with a dark history of murder, suicide, crime, and abuse. Is it the souls of this dark past that still haunt this building today? What are they trying to tell this innocent security officer?
I think the first thing that ever happened to me is when my grandfather passed away. He was a big part of my life. And my grandmother was telling me about that before she passed away. She told me that when he passed away, it was like a couple nights after he did, he'd always come in the room the same way he did. He would tuck her on her feet, and then he let her know that he was there and then get in bed with her. And she said after a couple nights of that, he would, he kept getting in bed with her. And then, it was really devastating because he was more like my father figure. And I ended up having a couple dreams after that because, he was pretty much my world. So I ended up, falling, into, some really bad stuff. I didn't want to eat, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then one night I was having a dream about my grandfather come to me. He said, you need to stop this. He goes, I'm fine. He goes, I'm up here with my family. It's all good. And, I kind of felt a little better after that. And, it's just been crazy since. Pretty sure. Much my grandmother has seen him a couple times, smelt his cologne a couple times, here and there. And then my aunt's uncle's seen him. I don't know what it is, but I guess it's just like stuff that, it's kind of weird, really. Like they would let you know that by, certain little aspects of their life that you are used to, and then they would just pop up a little bit and be like, hey, how you guys doing and stuff like that. So, yeah, I've witnessed a lot of stuff growing up.
So it's always just been kind of a part of life for you, you would say. Not something where, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is real. It's just been, it's been a facet of the cycle of life.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did other people, obviously you mentioned your grandmother, but everyone around you, your family, are they all the same way? Are they all able to experience these sort of things? Or would you consider yourself to be more sensitive than the others in your family to the other side?
No. I think my father's side, they've dealt with a lot of stuff. I remember a while back I didn't write a story about my grandfather coming back and cleaning their room and stuff like that. That actually did happen. And the only one that was up at the time was my Uncle Pee Wee. And he actually saw his dad in the room. He was kissing everyone on the forehead and he kind of acted like he was asleep. And this one, they were in the kids. So this had to be like maybe early 80s, or maybe late 70s. Mm-hmm. And he remembers him coming into his room, cleaning the room and watched him. But he was so terrified because he just lost his father a week before, and here he is, in his room cleaning. And my grandfather, from what I understand, because I never really got to meet my grandfather on that side, because he passed away when my father was, I think, 16. Mm-hmm. So, I've never really got to meet him, but he hated a dirty room. He couldn't stand it.
And he came back and cleaned the room. Can you share that story?
Yeah, I did a while back on a. I wrote it in a while back, but it was really weird, like how my father said it. He came in a couple. He told me a couple stories about after his father passed away. My grandfather used to have this chair in the living room, and they were having a party one night. And apparently, my grandfather disapproved of the party that they were having because they were all underage, besides my uncle, my oldest uncle. And sure enough, they heard somebody like coming through the hallway real quick, and they all stopped the music and they all looked over at my grandfather's chair, and there was a perfectly good imprint of a person sitting in that chair. And they said, all right, that's enough. Dad said, that's enough. And they stopped the party. Everybody went home.
quite a shock to have something like that happen, especially with the party. And I guess it would probably break it up. Let's move a little bit more forward into present time. And one of the big reasons that we're talking today, you had initially called in to our other program, Real Ghost Stories Online, when you discovered that there were some things happening at this building that you are a security guard at. Now, we're not going to talk about the name of the building or anything like that or give any specific location details or anything of that nature, but tell me, what brought you to take this job as a security professional at this location?
To be honest, it was more or less close to my house, but I didn't know the history of this place. I saw an opening, and I had a little daughter on the way, so I was like, you know what, I really need the money. So, but it was kind of weird when they told me when I was in, interview, they were all sitting down there like, for those, because it was like, and they're like, well, those you going to this place? He goes, I just want to warn you, there's some hot spots you want to go in. And we're all looking at each other like, hot spots? We thought like crime related. No, they were talking about some other stuff. He's like, don't go in the ballroom. He goes, after this certain time, he goes, don't go downstairs by yourself. Take somebody with you. And we're just like sitting there puzzled, like, what are you talking about? He's like, dude, paranormal stuff. Just listen, please. Because we've already had guards beforehand, before the company came before us. A guard came in, was walking up the steps, got pushed and shoved and thrown up against the wall. He ran upstairs, told everybody he was done, and signed out and quit that night.
So they had some awareness to the fact that there's things happening here. You weren't the first one to begin to experience it. Before we jump into the stories of your experiences and your coworkers' experiences, and again, without giving identifying details of what this building is or where this building is, what was the history of the building factually that you are aware of in its location? What was it? What was it built for? What was it like during its heyday, as opposed to where it's at today?
Heyday, it was like the first, first kind of hotel, really. Mm-hmm. I guess in the area, it was built for the elite of the area, and it was more or less, it was top notch of the day. It was grand staircases, grand marble, all that stuff, pianos in almost every part of the building and stuff like that. But from what I understand, during a little bit past that time, the mafia owned it, and there is accountable stories where even Al Capone stayed here for the meetings. So they would have family meetings from the Midwest from New York to all the way from California. All the mobster families would come here once a year and meet up and start doing their dealings. And that could be explained why, all the stuff about the furnace and stuff like that. But there is accountable proof there. They even have, they found an old chest, and they found a picture with Al Capone with some of the women that used to clean this place back in the day. And they would take pictures with them as they were drinking, partying and stuff. But from what I understand, Al Capone stayed here, but he didn't actually stay the night. He stayed a little bit up the way at another another hotel. He stayed there so much that they have a little room dedicated to Al Capone. It's considered the Al Capone suite.
Mm-hmm. In terms of tragedy that was documented, obviously when you have mafia and mob figures involved, you don't necessarily have a lot of documented murders unless something is caught. And of course, we'll get into that a little bit later on and what some of the rumors and some of the stories have been over time. But in terms of the property itself and there being any sort of tragedy that was documented, is there anything there? Is there any stories involving tragedy, whether it be murders, accidents, things of that nature?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. We haven't actually made a count yet, but we're figuring somewhere in the thousands. There's been, back in the day, there was people jumping on the windows. There was a little girl that fell out the window. There's another little girl fell out the window. There's been murders here and there, man. I was looking up on it, and the other guard I work with, we were going through it a while back trying to figure out some more of the history of this place. And so far, only thing we found is murder, suicides, or robbery, murders. And it's just been insane with just, the amount of death this place has been putting out.
Thousands is quite a steep number, quite honestly, when you're talking about a single location. Is that truly what you're meaning? That many deaths on the property?
Yes. I'm being dead serious when I say this. There's literally, I even checked up on the local news and stuff, and everything I've heard about this place has been either a murder or, you know, suicide and stuff like that. It's just, we've been trying to dig, you know, we even tried to find out what, the original owner passed away of. It said he died. It won't give the destination of his gravesite. It won't tell us how he died. But, it's just the amount of stuff that we found about this place, like, it's pretty bad. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's in a current state of renovation, but prior to it going through that, what was its life like as a building between the point of being this grand, luxurious hotel that the elite would go to and spend their time, including mobsters, and then kind of falling into a state of disrepair? Was it abandoned for a period of time? Did it just fall into disrepair and slowly fall apart, but still open to a certain extent? What was its life like for that period?
To be honest with you, it was bad ownership. This place used to be, apparently back in the day, it used to be really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you can still see some of the artwork and stuff like that from where they, you know, when the old owners used to own it, they ended up shutting the ballroom off because a pipe busted. They didn't fix the pipe, so the pipe was literally filling the ballroom with water, and they just boarded it up, residence apartments and stuff like that. It's just, you know, there was holes, you know, from where the water would pour in from the ceiling, stuff just like, it was just really bad. This place almost got demolished, but due to the rich history it's had, they actually saved this place, which, you know, that's really good because, you know, depending on how many like people lived here and, you know, pretty much lived their life here.
Mm-hmm.
This place is really good in rich history with like, celebrities staying here and stuff between going to, concerts and stuff. They can even document from like Michael Jackson to James Brown to a lot of big high celebrities at the time staying at this place. And back then it was, again, top place to actually stay at.
And then at some point just falling into disrepair. And unfortunately, we see that in so many areas of the country where you have these once grand buildings and grand hotels that for one reason or another, whether it be finances, they can't keep up with the maintenance of them. And then they fall and begin to decay over time, and their grandeur slowly fades away. But you can still see the remnants of it. That's always been very fascinating to me with buildings like that.
Yeah.
So it's essentially in a state right now where they're trying to pull it out of the decay, from what I understand. Is that right? And trying to renovate this back to a hotel, back to residential living. What's the ultimate goal?
My apologies. Go ahead.
Oh, I said, what's the ultimate goal?
It's right now, it's still at a residency,
mm-hmm.
But it's like a lower income. But I'm just going to throw the number out there. I asked the guy that who actually takes care of the property now, and I asked him. I said, you know, I wanted to know. I was like, you know, you guys are spending all this money. Do you mind if I ask how much you've got spent so far? And they said, oh, yeah. He goes, I have no problem with that. He goes, we spent $76 million just to get it to back into the form that we've got it now.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a lot of money to put. But it's worth it. You know, that's what they've been talking about. It's such a beautiful place.
And to not let it continue to decay, that there's something to be said for that. So with renovation, quite often comes disturbances, especially in older buildings where there is quite a storied history. Do you, from what you've understood, I want to ask the question of ghost stories that you've heard in the building. Obviously, when you went there for the job, they had told you, you know, we had a previous security firm that had members of the staff who left because of what they experienced. But even prior to that, prior to a security firm having experiences in the building, had there been paranormal stories from its residents that were just living there prior to the renovation beginning and everything?
Yes, I can vouch for that right now. I still get calls at night saying, you know, stuff happening. Hey, you know, I think somebody's in my apartment. We'll go up there real quick, check it out. Nobody's in the apartment besides him. And then as soon as we start walking out the door, TV turns back on.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay, it's kind of weird. And they were standing like, how do we go from this? how do we do this? And the lady just starts, you know, I'll say a blessing. It's okay. Thank you guys for coming up. And that's how it ends.
They're just used to it because it's been going on for so long. Have the residents said that it's increased in recent times because of all the renovations?
They actually hate the guy that actually going to the construction. They hate him because this stuff wasn't as bad as it was until he came in and started fixing. It needed fixed, but they literally do not like the guy. But he's actually trying to help him out. But they always tell us that this wasn't happening before you guys came in, or this wasn't happening. Now I got this going on in my house and because of you guys.
And I'm sure it's not necessarily any sort of nefarious intent from that gentleman. He's just doing his job. And unfortunately, when you do that to older buildings, sometimes that does stir things up. There's no one that can control that. It just seems to happen. And it's luck of the draw if the building's going to have that reaction or not. So let's get into the world of you being a security guard at this building. When you heard these stories in your orientation of paranormal activity, what was going through your mind? Did you believe it? Were you scared? What were you thinking?
I'm pretty much used to it now. Just, I never experienced some like half the stuff that they have going on here in this building. It was something I was used to, but then again, like, some of the stuff kind of threw me a curveball, and I'm like, okay, wow, that just happened.
What was your first encounter, your first experience in that building with the job that made you raise an eyebrow going, oh, I think I'm having an experience right now, too?
I think there's kind of, like, two. I remember, like, them telling about it, and I was sitting down with my partner one night, and it was the middle of, you know, right when it started construction, so I don't know if it was, you know, if I could say, well, that was something paranormal, but it kind of points that way. I was sitting down with my partner about, I think 3 or 4 in the morning, maybe, and it was quiet, nobody was up, so it was just me and my partner. She was on my left, and I was on the right, and we were sitting in the middle of the lobby. And all of a sudden, I heard, like, what it sounded like two women were talking, and they sounded very distinguished. Like, their voice sounded more or less like it was from way back in the day. And I was just sitting there like, what the hell is that? I looked at my partner. I said, hey, you know, do you hear that? And she was playing music, and she goes, no, it might be my music. She goes, well, I was like, well, can you turn it down real quick? She's like, yeah, I'll just go ahead and turn it down. We're sitting there, and it sounded like two ladies talking to us. On my right side. And I said, that's fucking weird. She goes, yeah, but I think the most one I've ever, like, it scared the crap out of me. We got a noise complaint from inside the ballroom. At that time, it was boarded up on all sides besides one side. You had to have a special key to get in there. I walked in there after the complaint. They said there was, like, somebody in there screaming or playing or something. The lady didn't really want to talk about it much. She says, I know this is coming from the ballroom. So, okay, fine. So, I said, all right, I'm going to go in the ballroom real quick. I'll be right back. I took my big flashlight with me and took a radio, and I walked in there. And I opened the door, and it sounded creaked out because the old door they had on it just creaked really loud open. I walked in there. It was pitch black because it had the windows and stuff covered up. I started walking around. I didn't hear nothing at first, see nothing. Then all of a sudden, my flashlight flickered. And that kind of made me jump. And then I heard like a little girl laugh. And that scared the shit out of me right then. I was like, okay, wait a second. I started to back up. Then I seen something look like a little, like, I can't explain it, but it looked like a cloud, like a little black cloud. It went to the left, and then I flung my flashlight real quick. I already had my gun in my hand at that point. It went to the right. I was like, all right, I'm backing the hell up. I started backing up. And I started radioing the radio. I said, hey, you know, there's something in here with me. I don't know what the hell it is. She goes, you might as well get the hell out of there. So I started backing up. And then right when I turned my turn around for the last time, my flashlight hit the wall and a little girl was standing there. I've never been so scared in my damn life that I'm getting goosebumps right now. I ran. I never, ever went back in that ballroom until it's been finished.
You saw a little girl standing there. Can you describe what she looked like?
You ever, like, oh, man. it was like, I it was a couple seconds glance, but I knew I seen a little girl. It looked like a little white dress or something, but I was so scared, man. I ran. I wasn't messing with that shit. And then after that, I went there, wrote a report about it, and my boss got the report about a week later, and he said, "So what happened?" And I explained to him, and he said, "Dude, that's why I said don't go in the ballroom. You know, there's too much stuff in there since the construction stuff. It's making stuff go crazy in there." And I believed him after that. Like, I just thought he was messing around and stuff like that, because, you know, it's an old building. You think, you know, oh yeah, it's got to be haunted. No, that night for sure, I knew right then and there that it was haunted. Like, I didn't want to go nowhere but myself. We used to have a rover come with us, and if we end up having to do a round and he came with us, if it was our turn to do a round, we took him with us. You know, it just, some of the shit that goes on in this place still to this day, like, most of it's calmed down, but man, that night I almost quit. That was a pull and pull. That was like more or less like, okay, I got to make a decision, either quit now or, you know, man up and do this.
What made you decide to stay?
The little girl saying help or saying hi. Well, I like him. My apologies. That right there kind of drew to, I guess, the softer side of me. To me, at that point, I looked. I said, all they need is help. Like, that's what they need. And I was out there by myself one morning, again, about 4 o'clock in the morning, smoking a cigarette out front. No cars. And it was dead quiet. And usually that's when we know something either bad's about to happen or something is about to show itself, because it will literally get dead quiet. And when I mean dead quiet, you can literally hear your breathing. You can hear your heartbeat. And we'll look at each other. And when I'm with the other female guard, I'll look at him like, oh, here it goes. And then sure enough, either something come walking out or a door will slam or something will open up.
The initial thought being that these things need help, and that's what they're saying, and that's what's being portrayed to you. Do you have any, is there any discussion with any of your coworkers or anybody about who this little girl is that showed herself to you?
Yes, we believe she used to sing to the contractor downstairs. And when the first contractor got here, he's still here, but he really don't. Since the building's almost done, he's hardly here. He's at another project. But he literally went down there one day, or no, I think it might have been like nighttime, somewhere around there. But he came down there and was trying to clear out, see where he had to put, where he was able to put his tools and all his new equipment and stuff. And he was down there and he thought he was alone. And he started walking around and heard a little girl start singing. And then she was whistling and then back to singing. And he probably thought that somebody was lost down there. And he goes, hey, you know, you guys can't be down here. He took his flashlight, started walking around. When he got close to singing, it stopped. He walked into the room, and there was nothing there. He said, oh, it's that kind of singing. All right. And then he went on about his day like it was nothing else.
Almost as if this is just part of the building, and he's used to it. And yep, it is what it is. So you had the experience, you kind of had the moment of grappling with the idea of staying or leaving. Obviously, you chose to stay. Continue on. What were some of the next experiences that you had after making that decision to continue working in this very haunted historic hotel?
I think the one that sticks out to me most is it has to be on the fifth floor, man. It's not only been me that's had experience up there. There's been, what I've looked through on the newspapers and stuff, there's been about 2 murders, but one was actually a little girl and her grandmother. Apparently a guy found out where they were laying or staying at and went up there and killed both of them. I don't know what happened to the guy. He really didn't say anything else about the guy, but there's another guy up there who most of the residents still remember to this day, that he was up there doing his own business and he was going to go to sleep, and his friend came over and he told his friend, when you leave, just, you know, lock the door for me so I don't have to get up because I got to work in the morning. And it was more or less a setup. His friend was another guy was outside. His friend purposely left the door open. Dude came in with a shotgun and killed him point blank range with the shotgun. And ever since then, it's just the fifth floor is like I haven't felt it like that in a while, but when I was first started here, that fifth floor, out of any other floor, it just gave me the creeps. Like, it felt like people were, like, nonstop just eyeing you down so hard. Like, when you walk through, you have to feel like you have to shake it off. And, you know, there's other guards that walked up there and felt like something jumped on their back and, like, literally walked around with them until they left that floor. You know, it's the fifth floor. I could not do it. I literally would walk almost a couple feet down to the hallway and have to turn around real quick because it feels like somebody's trying to rush up against me. And I'd start to reach for my flashlight and either my pepper spray or my gun and start to pull it and turn around. There's nobody there. And it's just, I can't explain the feeling, but that shit is really bad. It was really bad back in the day. Like, when I first started, it was just insane. I've never felt that much energy in my life. It just, as soon as you like get that like you're being watched feeling, and all of a sudden you just feel a burst of energy come running at you, and like you're literally standing there just shaking, like, what the hell was that? And you can't explain it because nobody's standing in front of you or behind you. And I will literally walk down the hallway sideways because it felt like every time I started to turn my back, it felt like it was just going to come back at me again.
It's something that you've gone to all the floors on the building as a security guard, and you're saying there is that distinct difference of a feeling on that floor than, say, the sixth floor or the seventh floor. If you're on the fifth floor, you could almost with your eyes shut walk onto that floor and know what floor you're on because of the feelings that overwhelm you.
Yes, it's more or less, it's, I guess, the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's some floors in here that are, you know, somewhat pretty bad, but man, that fifth floor, like, it's a whole different ball game. It's a whole different vibe. At some points, like, we use walkies throughout the building, and only in like certain areas we thought for a while that it was probably bad signal. No, we'd walk around there on the fifth floor and it would lose signal throughout the whole floor. And then some days you get up there and it's like a different energy and a different atmosphere. And then the walkies would literally work throughout the whole floor, and then on others it wouldn't. And then there's some places where you walk through and you'll feel really cold real quick, and then the static and the radios will come out really loud and then stop as soon as you get out the cold spot.
This is kind of a chicken before the egg question, and it's completely an opinion-based question, but what do you think happened first on the fifth floor? These tragic events that then brought on this feeling, this negative energy now that lingers? Or do you think there was something negative there that was lingering that then the individuals who were always on that floor, who lived on that floor, or spent a great deal of time on that floor, just got so overwhelmed that it drove them to commit the heinous acts that they did because of that energy, that atmosphere that they were constantly surrounded by?
I think after the first, man, I think after the first murder, it has to be after the first one, because people wouldn't say anything about it, you know, after the first murders, besides, you know, two people lost their lives. But after that, they said it was a whole different like feeling when you walked up there. I think those killings kind of attracted something really bad, because now we're only getting stuff like in the fifth floor. It's completely changed now that, you know, me, I went up there with some sage before and blessed the whole floor, and I sage really heavy. I used almost the whole stick on fifth floor and went out through the whole building. But now it's more or less like a different feeling. It still doesn't have, it still has the feeling that it did back then, but not as bad. Many more nowadays, it's to the fourth floor, third, and second, and first. There's like, we're getting guards, Sam, telling me that I'm being touched on that. I don't know how to, I don't know how to combat that. Like, maybe bringing a cross or something, bless yourself or something. Or we have a church right across the street. Like, maybe go talk to them. Because, you know, that's what the head contractor did. It got so bad that, you know, he was being attacked almost daily with either going down to where the old wine room was, that he went across the street, got a cross blessed, and he wears it anytime he comes in his building to go down there. There's just so much stuff down the basement now. And now we're still finding out stories that happened downstairs and stuff like that. It's just, you know, more stuff is coming out downstairs than it is even up through the building now. Well, I did, I last story I heard was from a lady the other day, or I think about a week, maybe two. They've seen the tall man in the stairwell. And that's the last thing I heard from anybody. But there was one guy here, and he says, man, I'm gonna have my kids come down and tell you some stories. I said, you're talking about like paranormal stuff? He goes, yeah, buddy. He goes, I thought they were lying, but he goes, man, the stuff they're telling me is linking up with most of the stuff that people are telling me. He goes, I'm, you know, kind of scared for them, but, you know, they'll tell you some stuff, and it gave me goosebumps when they told me. He hasn't came down yet to tell me any of this stuff, but he keeps telling me, he goes, every time he comes by, he goes, hey, you know, I'm gonna have my daughters come there and talk to you, and I guess he just gets sidetracked or whatever, but. And the biggest thing now they're finding is wet spots in the middle of the floor. And they went through the building, they've combed the building. There's no pipes leaking anywhere, so they even checked the floors. So where is these wet spots coming from? And they're only in certain spots. So one either be in the kitchen or in the master bedroom. And nobody knows what it is. And when they'll leave it for 30 minutes or an hour and then come back and it's gone. But then, you know, there's been days where it literally has not rained at all, and they'll come home and there's a wet spot either in their kitchen or in their bedroom.
With this building, and you said you had a coworker who went out and talked to the church about the situation there. Aside from that, has anyone that you're aware of prior to you being there, while you're there, ever tried to do anything to eradicate the activity in this building? Because it sounds extremely widespread and must be very difficult for someone who is trying to run the building or keep tenants happy to do so when things are constantly kind of, you know, in a disarray in terms of the energy of the building.
My partner, I think, him and another guy went downstairs, and another old employee, they went downstairs and they said they, since they ain't seen nothing, they were going to try to ramp it up. And I said, you guys don't want to do that because, you know, they were on second, we were on third. I said, it's not you guys that's going to experience this shit. It's going to be us. And he goes, as soon as 12 o'clock hits, which is considered witching hour, I said, we're going to get this shit and we're going to get hard. I said, just please don't. And they said, oh, man, nothing's going to happen. And then they go downstairs, and later that night, again, at 12 o'clock, almost every damn door before the place even opened up on the second floor literally opened and closed. And we went down there, and sure enough, we go down there and see a door open and get ready to close, and the damn thing was closed right in our face. And I told him, I said, you guys, I'm not allowed to do this shit no more. It's because to me, I think they're just doing to piss them off, and I think that's what they did that night, because we had a lot of shit happen tonight. We've had the call where the lady told us, hey, you know, there's somebody's knocking on my door. We go up there, stand around, you know, wait, nobody knock on the door. We even stood inside the apartment, nobody knocked on the door. But as soon as we start in the corner and we look back real quick, sure enough, there'd be somebody standing there knocking on her door. We couldn't see who was standing there, but we heard them knock, and that knock was really loud. And it's just, we had the doors opening and closing on the second floor before he was even open to the public. The only people that could go down there was construction, security, or the office. And we'd go down there just to do our rounds and, you know, try to, you know, push out the homeless people that were down there and stuff. But, man, I don't know what the hell they did that night, but they did something to piss them off.
The basement, the lower levels of the building, something I know that you have mentioned previously on our other program, but for the listeners of this show who have not heard about it, talk about the darker elements of the basement and some of the discoveries that have been made down there through the course of the renovations.
I just found this out. Apparently they used to do seances, or they used to do cult stuff down there. Because he didn't want to talk about it there for a while, the contractor. So he told me a while back when we were doing our rounds and stuff, I actually heard through the video, like, saying, you know, you're right, you know, the voice. They walked into the old wine room when they were cleaning out, and it was literally knee-high with animal bones. And it wasn't, like, just any ordinary animal bones. It was chicken bones. It was cat bones. It was dog bones. And they even found a human femur down there. Like, I'm pretty sure they used to do some kind of occult stuff down there. Mm-hmm. And it was right next to the room where they found where the ceiling was burnt and found out that 10 homeless people were set afire in there.
You had alluded to a while back that there was some suspicion that there were areas of the basement where mob activity had taken place or disposal of bodies. Was that ever confirmed, or what did you find out there?
I haven't heard anything else about that. I've asked the contractor many times. I think it's just a point of where they're like, you know what, we need to keep hush-hush about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time I ask, they're like, well, we don't know what's going on, I haven't heard anything else about it, and that's the end of it. But I don't understand why a building like this would have an incinerator in it. The only reason I would think somebody would have an incinerator down here would be to get rid of evidence. This building should have never, ever had an incinerator built into it. Like, there's no way. And it wasn't originally part of the building either. It was built during the 30s and 40s. And that was during the mob era down here. So I'm guessing that was just a way of, hey, let's go ahead and get rid of evidence.
It's an assumption that's being made, but some pieces that have been put together to make that assumption that seem to hold some credence as to why that would possibly be there. With the entities, obviously, it sounds like there's far more than just the little girl that is in this building. By your estimation, what are you dealing with in this building? How many? Can you put a number on it with the amount of things that are going on there, or the amount of entities that are there?
I believe that the owner is still here. I believe that, to be honest, because, you know, with all the stuff that's happened after they started refabbing and all that, I think he's still here just to make sure that everything's run correctly and, you know, things are being done the way it should be. I think he was more or less, when they first started, I think he was just worried that they were going to either destroy it or whatnot. But I think once he's seen and knew that they were actually good intentions, I think most of it's been letting off, but there for a while, man, it was horrific. And I know for sure there has to be at least 15, 20. They had a lady a while back, and she said she could do psychic stuff. And she even proved it to the lady in the office. She told her a bunch of stuff that, you know, she never met this lady, and she walked up her and she's like, I don't believe in none of that stuff. She goes, okay, give me a real quick minute. She, like, rubbed her eyes real quick and then looked up. She goes, okay. And she started explaining to her cousin that passed away and then the older lady that was standing next to her. And she goes, and then when she's like, how would you know that? You know, stuff like that. And she goes, and the lady that is no longer in the office asked her, she goes, I got a question. She goes, this place is haunted. And she goes, oh, yes, hon. And she goes, do you know how many people are here or lost? And she goes, honey, they have to be in the hundreds. She goes, every time I come here to go get my mail, she goes, I will look down because I can't stand the sight of looking up. And she goes, well, can you tell us why? And she goes, because they're begging for help and there's nothing I can do. She goes, there's kids, there's older men, there's older women. She goes, there's all kinds of age range. And she goes, no, there's nothing I can do. You need like a priest or something to come in here and send them on their way because there's nothing I can do. And I had a dream a while back about that where I was sitting in my guard post, looked up, heard somebody saying, help me, screaming, help me. And I, you know, I didn't think too much of it, looked back down, and I heard it even louder. So finally, I stood up, and literally a hole opened up in the middle of the lobby, and there was people crawling out of it, screaming, God, help me, please help me. And, like, it gave me, I couldn't sleep right for a week afterwards. Like, it really messed me up. And they're all trying to reach out for me and screaming. Like, I woke up crying when I had that dream because at that point I knew these people needed help, but again, there's nothing I can do. I've asked the building if we can get a priest in here or something. They said, well, once, you know, construction's done, we're going to try to get a priest in here and help as many as we can pass over. But that dream, I could even explain to you what they were calling out. It was literally a black hole in the middle of the floor. And down by the little bit where the opening of the hole was, it was kind of red. There was no fire or anything coming out. It was just them screaming and crying. Some of them had bullet wounds in their heads. Some of them had, you know, stab wounds. Some of them had, like, needle marks, and some of them had needles stuck in their arm. And they were just screaming and crying, asking for me to help them, please. And it really messed me up. Like, I think that changed me a little bit on the inside because I've never experienced something like that. And then just to see that, and, like, I could feel, like, them trying to reach out for me and asking for my help. And, again, I couldn't do anything. And that really hurt me because I even seen kids coming out the hole and they're screaming and crying for mom and dad, and there's, you know, it really fucked me up.
Why do you believe, or did the psychic put any information out there about why she believes there are so many tortured souls in this one location?
She brought up due to, like, because it was like a high crime rate a while back, you know, even in the 70s, and it was kind of a high crime rate because, you know, heroin and stuff like that. Most of them were either drug overdoses or killed because of drugs, or, you know, there's a couple in there that didn't really get the Passover. Something kind of caught their attention on the way up, or, you know, to be judged, and they got lost. But most of it's due to, like, overdoses, murders, and suicides.
Lots and lots of sadness and overwhelming sense of it. Yeah. With that can sometimes be confusing when you have a haunted location with such sadness that comes from humans. Sometimes that can be misdiagnosed as there's something demonic or something dark that was not human that is lingering in a location. And I believe in some cases there are those sort of things that are there. But it can also be a combination of just that, an incredible amount of human sadness that still lingers. In your opinion, do you feel that this building is inhabited mainly by the living that are in a very sad, dark state? Or is there something else there that, in fact, maybe was never human and is possibly the D word, demonic, in that building?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, the before they came in here, and, you know, well, when they first came in here, they were like, yeah, something's wrong with this building, as in, like, it not being taken care of properly. The police that got called here for an incident actually stopped and started going through people's apartments. I think, like, living in that kind of way will do something to a person, because it's more or less living in filth. Like, if you take somebody and put them in that for, like, years and years, it's eventually going to pretty much just, you know, slowly tear at them. But again, man, I can put, I'll swear to you right now, there is something demonic in that basement. I'm not going to lie to you. There is something really bad in that basement. There's been too many incidents where people have been scratched, hit, you know, slapped. There's, you know, multiple accounts where people go down to the basement where they used to burn coal, and they walk out, you know, after just changing light bulb, and have a scratch, three scratches going from the between their shoulder blades all the way down to the crack of their ass or on their ass cheek. You know, and it's a big enough scratch to where it leaves blood. There has to be something down there with all the stuff that's been going on. You know, we still get to where there's that one door that blocks off the whole bottom part of the building, and it'll be a guard on there, and that door will slam and open to the point where the guard has to go, all right, I'm done with this. He has to walk outside real quick until it's finished, or walk upstairs to, like, okay, that's enough, I'm done, and then they'll come back down once it's done. There has to be there has to be something dark down there. There's been too many murders down there in that basement. You know, from a guy who was doing drugs with the lady. She got a bad batch or something, and she started stabbing him for no reason, and then burned his body down there, and then pretty much robbed him. And then from all the other stuff that's happened down there, just too many people, too many stories coming out of that basement to where they go down there and they're getting scratched, or they'll listen to, they're on a phone call, and the other person say, who's that with you? You know, they're breathing really heavily, and they're like, well, I'm alone. And they're like, well, you need to get the fuck out of that basement, because you can hear somebody breathing really heavy while they're on the phone. And, you know, the contractor even took down there and recorded it, and all you can hear is, like, an angrily growl or an angrily breathing, like someone's really pissed off.
Do you believe, from being in this building now for a period of time, has anything ever followed you home from the building?
Yes. I believe, like, it's the point now. There's some days that I can feel different, like, emotional-wise. Some parts of the building I'll walk through and I'll just start feeling like I gotta cry. Or, you know, I'll get really pissed off for no reason. And then there's nights where I feel like I'm not myself, and I'm carrying stuff with me. And, you know, I think I carried something to the house a while back. I think it was that little girl I carried home because my daughter, you know, we took a couple videos. You know, I bought them a couple toys and like a ball pit, and they were playing in it. And I was doing a video, and then there's white lights just shooting all around. I kind of threw it off as maybe it was dust, but I changed my mind when I seen one of the little lights stop midair and then turn and then go the other way. And I was like, well, that's not dust. That's something else. And then my daughter, she would not sleep in that room. And she's three, and I have a one-year-old that would sleep in that room. And it got so bad one night that I literally had to bring both of them out in our room. And I went in there and, again, wasted almost a whole stick of stage. And then after that, they were fine. They would go back in there. Then a couple of days later, it ran right back up. Now it's to the point where I ended up moving my daughter, my three-year-old, downstairs into her grandpa's and grandma's room. And now my youngest stays in our room. But I walked in there one night because my one-year-old was screaming like something scared the shit out of her. Like it terrified her. I walked in there and I said, you know, I'm done with this shit. I want you out the fucking house now. You're not welcome here. After that, I have not heard nobody walking in there. I even said, you know, I went through the Bible real quick, read a couple of verses. After that, I have not heard nobody in there. I've not, you know, my daughter is fine. We started making her sleep back in there. I think last couple of days she's been sleeping there. She'll sleep through the whole night and it's fine now. I don't know what the fuck was in there, but it was messing with my daughters. I know you have kids, but it's just at a point where you have the affection and that, you know, that to them kids that when something happens like that, you literally feel useless as a parent because there's nothing you can do. Like if the person was real, that's fine. I could probably kick their ass or, you know, throw them out the house or something, but there's nothing I could have done to, you know, to help protect them. Because I work in a building that people, you know, that, you know, they're suffering and stuff. But again, man, I just felt useless as hell. I even felt on the, you know, a little bit of a like a dark spell there for a little bit. Like I was down. I left. I felt like I had no energy whatsoever. And then something snapped at me and I just walked in there and I was like, I'm fucking done with this shit. You need to leave the house now. And did what I did. And it feels a lot calmer now. And then the atmosphere changed there. I'm guessing something in there moved on or whatever hell it went. I'm just glad it's not in there no more because now my daughter, my one-year-old, can sleep in there. You know, it's just, it took an emotional toll on me and my girlfriend because there for a while we didn't really believe that anything was in there. We just thought my daughter was watching, you know, too many ghost stories or stuff like that on, you know, on the Travel Channel or something like that. And there for a while, I would stay up late at night and my girlfriend wake up real quick and see a little girl standing behind me. Or we'd wake up and there looked like my oldest is standing at the end of the bed. And I'd get up real quick and then look at the end of the bed. Nobody's there. I'd go in there real quick, check on my daughter. She's dead asleep. So I'm pretty sure a little girl was there. I'm pretty sure she probably didn't mean nothing harmful. She was probably just lonely and just wanted somebody to play with because she kept trying to wake my oldest up to play with her. And my oldest kept telling her, no, I don't want to play with you. I want to go to bed. And so I'm right now. I'm just happy. There's nothing left in that room that I know of. And I have me saying that. I'm pretty sure I probably seeing some shit tonight or something.
It's difficult to say if it's done or not. For yourself, I know you had mentioned over the several months that you've been sharing these stories with us of kind of almost coming to a breaking point of your employment there of saying I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore. What has kept you there all this time? And is there a point where you're going to say, I don't want to be here anymore? What's keeping you there?
More or less just, I figure we do once the building's done, we can just get somebody to come here and help them. I guess it's just pulling at the softer side of me. Like I really want to help these people. I don't think people deserve to be stuck somewhere that they're not happy. Like I have utmost respect for this building and I enjoy what I do, but sometimes this shit can get a little hairy, but you know, I believe that this place, you know, needs to be treated better. And I think once stuff started changing, is when they started finding out that, you know, I'm actually here to help with the building and stuff, just like with the contractor. You know, I haven't been seeing much stuff. Like, I will see some stuff, you know, I'll be like, you know, I haven't seen nothing in a while. And then, sure enough, like, I'll literally watch something form in the middle in front of me and walk through a door. And I'm like, oh, cool. And then walk on about my business.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.